Hey everybody, Shane Presley here with Rock Paper Podcast to tell you about my friends over at The Gaslight on the Hill, located on Kings Highway and Shaw Boulevard in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, go over there and check it out. It's a beautiful recording studio attached to a bar, shares a wall with Cha Cha Chow, so you can come over, have some cold drinks, watch one of your favorite bands record, eat some tacos, and just have a great time. There's all kinds of music going on over there, and a lot of unique recordings and things. It's really something special for St. Louis, and so get out and support them. Check it out. Full listings on GaslightSTL.com. Follow along on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and again, everything GaslightSTL.com. Also want to tell you about my friends at Music Record Shop. They have a brand new location in the Zach Building over... It used to be the old Plush building, if you may remember that location. So check it out. Go on over there, visit them. They got new records in every Friday. A lot of live in stores and all kinds of things. So yeah, you can shop online 24/7, musicrecordshop.com. Also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Podcast is kind of like it's like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
Hi, I'm Ron.
Hey, I'm Chris.
And we're the Kingdom Brothers, and you're listening to Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock, 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 rock,
we'll be right back.
said, well, we hang our heads, we hang our heads in shame. Well, we must be true to the only love we knew. Yeah, and no longer be blue, yeah. Oh, yeah, come back. People, come back to your first love. You get a right on track. Come back. People, come back to your first love. You get a right on track.
Everybody, Shane Presley here with Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri. Hanging out today with Chris and Ron of the Kingdom Brothers. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Yeah, this is very exciting for me. I know I've been seeing the name a lot more. I know you guys have been, you know, hustling around town, playing a lot of gigs and stuff, and then I think it was over the late summer at the Big Muddy. I finally got to catch one of your guys' shows, and just was, you know, blown away. A really great show. And then I got to talking to I met Bob a while back, and yeah. Then I got to talking to Chris at Oyster Bar one night, and so I'm like, hey, we need to make this happen. And
yeah,
so here we are. Yeah, I'm glad glad it all worked out. I kind of like to, you know, people I've been keeping an eye on around town and stuff, I like to invite them on the show and kind of get to know more about them. So, tell me, where does Kingdom Brothers get started? Where you guys get?
It all starts with Bob Walther.
Yeah.
it was Bob's whole idea that he'd been in a lot of local bands. In fact, he used to play bass for Johnny Johnson for a while.
Okay.
And he was getting back into it, and he decided two things. He says, number one, I want to be in a band where there are no drunks, there are no guys that are chasing women constantly, that everybody's we have a really positive message about us, and he wanted that. And the second thing, he wanted us to try to do music that nobody else was playing around town. You know, because you can go in any club and hear mostly the same blues standards. And one reason is it's easy for people to get together because everybody knows the tunes.
Right.
So he wanted to do something a little bit different. So it was Bob's idea. And I had a friend that was a drummer that Bob had asked to join. He couldn't join, but he said, if you need a guitar player, and he mentioned my name. And so, and then Stan came in. So that was sort of the beginnings of it right there.
Yeah. So this and how long we're looking at now?
11 years.
11 years.
Yeah,
hard it's to taken us. It's been a slow climb.
Yeah,
which is okay.
Yeah, and we kind of went through kind of a little time of kind of finding our niche and kind of finding our sound. You know, when we first started, we had two singers. We had Tom Wilson with us, who, because of health reasons, had to eventually bow out. But now that, you know, I'm doing all the singing, it kind of forced us to kind of narrow down what we're doing. And, you know, I think we finally found our focus. That's probably what, you know. And,
sure.
Yeah, and actually, I guess, as far as the beginnings, you know, Charlie Dent was really kind of the center of this whole thing, because he played with Bob back in the Benders, didn't he?
He wasn't in the Benders. He was in, oh, gosh, I can't remember the name. I can't remember the name of the band.
Yeah, well, he had played with Bob before.
Right.
But I knew Charlie, and I was actually doing some other CD work in his little house studio that he's got. And I was mentioning to him what I wanted to start doing.
Yeah.
And he says, well, you know Ron. He goes, Ron's playing with some guys. He goes, that's exactly what they're doing. You ought to call him. So next thing I knew was called Ron and went to one of the practices. And 11 years later, here we are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. It's just crazy to me, like... you know, doing the show, I've discovered so much more music. Like, I always felt like I had a fair grasp of St. Louis music. You know, I knew quite a bit of people around the scene and things, but just doing this show has connected me to so many other people. Like, I had no idea, and I'm like, how is it that all these talented people are in my town and, like, you know, you don't hear about them? And, like,
right.
It's just like, and that's a lot of what the motivation for doing the show. I wanted to get, you know, the word out there, because there's some incredible players all over this town, and they're just, you know, they're not, maybe not household names exactly, but they deserve to be heard. They're, you know, so, so that was one of the things, like, how, you know, when I first heard Kingdom Brothers, I was like, how have I not heard of you guys yet? Like, so that's, so I'm glad we worked out, and like I said, getting to meet you guys and getting to know some of these songs now and stuff, and so you guys have two records of all original music and stuff?
Yeah, yep. This one's all original. Yeah. Our first one had a few covers.
Okay,
yeah. But this new one is all original. Most of it written by Chris, but Bob's written a couple of songs, and I wrote an instrumental on there.
Okay, yeah, I was really really enjoying the record. I gave it a listen this morning just to kind of get, you know, ready for the interview and stuff, and just really solid stuff. I really enjoyed the lyrics a lot to a lot of the songs. There was a couple I felt like really, you know, I could have wrote, you know, like I related to a lot to them and
great.
Stuff, and like
great.
So
that's really what we're looking for, you know. It gets a little old just singing about the same old blues topics that you've kind of heard for the last 40-50 years, you know. I'm sad,
sure.
She's gone,
yeah.
You know, you know, I'm gonna get drunk. You know, and so we love the genre, but we kind of want to also kind of make the songs have a little more meaning and be able to reach people. You know, we had a guy last night that came and he says, man, he goes, I just felt something inside when you guys were playing, you know. And I had another friend, he says, man, I feel like I just went to church. He goes, I feel so much better now. And that's what we're trying to do, you know.
Right.
We're really trying to reach people. We want something to connect with them. We want them to see us having a good time, you know. I mean, and everybody is just, you know, when they see Ron playing guitar, they're just blown away. They can't believe what they're seeing and hearing, you know. So I've actually seen people walk to the back of the venue, go get somebody, bring them up, and they're both pointing at Ron while he's playing.
I listened to it. There was a couple that really stood out to me, and one of those being Not Gonna Worry, and because of Ron's, I guess it's your slide work.
That's
on there?
That's my slide work.
Yeah,
yes.
And I'm a huge fan of slide, and especially electric slide like that and all that. But it sounded awesome, all that solo in the middle of the song.
Thanks.
And stuff.
Thanks.
So is that, there was a couple, I mean, like I said, there's a lot of that heavy guitar work in the songs. Is that something you guys really strive to focus on in the sound, is having a lot of that electric guitar work? I know you guys, Chris plays guitar as well, and
I get a lot of freedom in this, which is a lot of fun, which hasn't been, you know, everybody, you know, being a professional musician, you're always in situations where, I always like to say, you do the gig, you know, and you do what, in fact, we had a drummer sub for us one time, and we worked together in another band. He goes, man, I didn't know you played like that. I said, well, I didn't play like that in that band. In this band, I've been given the freedom to open up and do that. So,
right,
yeah, so it's fun.
Yeah. Well, you guys also have keys in
yes.
the band,
Stan mm-hmm. Gill,
and so it's two guitars, bass, keys, drums, That's everybody, right?
Yep.
That's everybody.
Yep.
All right.
So, yeah, and Stan does a lot of harmonies, too. So that's something you don't always hear in a blues-oriented band is harmonies.
Sure.
So, you know, you'll get it in more, you know, more gospel-style music, which we put some of that in there, too. But we try and bring it into even some of the other stuff that we do. So it just makes it a little more interesting, a little more pleasing on the ears to hear a little harmony, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. There's a couple of, that kind of reminded me like of Fabulous Thunderbirds or something like that, kind of some of the harmonies, vocals and stuff they do, but it still has that, you know, blues groove to it and stuff. I don't know, I really, it's definitely something you notice because you don't hear a lot
right.
of it, so yeah.
Right.
But yeah, there was a couple, Little Things and Better Man were two that, like, I connected probably the most to, like, the lyrics wise and stuff. Like I said, it felt like, you know, I thought Little Things was nice because it's more of your softer side, you know, more of a you know, laid back kind of a blues groove to it, instead of a lot of your stuff's kind of more rocking and dancing and stuff, so it's nice to have that dynamic to the record, having those softer side songs. And
yeah, that's one thing we try and keep a balance to. You know, Bob's really good about the songs that he picked originally for us to kind of do. You know, he was trying to pick stuff that wasn't just your standard, you know, stuff you hear all the time, you know, Stormy Monday, you know, and things like that. So we were trying to entertain people, stay true to the form, but do songs that are kind of different. And so, you know, you might get something that's got more of a New Orleans kind of sound to it. You might get something that's got more of a blues rock sound to it, you know. So we kind of try and make it as interesting as possible. And so on the record, we tried to do the same thing, mix it up as much as we could. And Little Things was actually a very old song that I had written years ago. I don't even remember how many it's been now. And while we were getting ready for the CD, it just kind of popped in my head one day, and I'm like, well, maybe I'll bring this to the guys and see if they like that. And
Stan always jokes because we you know, we were getting down to the deadline when we were going to go to the studio, and we had, like, what, about six tunes?
Yeah.
And it's like, gee, that's not quite enough. And Chris like, oh, I've got this one. I've got this one. Stan goes, where have you been hiding those?
Yeah, that's cool. That I know there's been a couple of different things, like stories similar to that, where people kind of, like, you know, reusing or bringing, you know, re-life to a new song and stuff, or in, you know, flipping it somewhere different and making it totally original again. And you know, so it's just fun to hear that people continue to, you know, reuse their own music and stuff. So,
well, and that's something I would really advise any performers and songwriters to think about, is just because something was done a while ago doesn't mean it necessarily has to be just put away and never used again. You know, I was a big Whitesnake fan in the early 90s, late 80s, and as I, you know, got into a lot of stuff that Dave Coverdale had done, I realized that he actually had released earlier in the 70s in England, of the same songs he was doing with Whitesnake over here, you know, and in the 90s. And I thought, wow, he just, you know, those are good songs, and he just stuck with them and just rearranged them a little bit, made them a little, you know, as he did the latter version of Whitesnake, it was more rock oriented, so he just rocked up the same tunes.
Sure.
You know, but they were still good songs, and I thought, huh, that's cool.
Yeah.
And I've just kind of always held on to stuff that I've written a while back, just thinking, maybe someday, because sometimes you have a song and you just feel like it just is not quite there,
right.
You know, and then one day things just kind of come together, you know, like with Better Man. Ron and I were actually practicing in his basement, and I was he was doing something, and I was just doing a little lick on the guitar. He goes, "Ooh, I like that." So he kind of picked it up, and I was just doing, like, kind of a two-string thing, and he turned it into a chord. And next thing I know, we had this, like, little arrangement for Better Man that just turned into a song that, you know, at first we weren't sure what was going to happen to it, and actually it ended up being one of people's favorite songs on the album.
And that's the great thing about this band, I think, because with all of our individual backgrounds, where we come from, when Chris presents his song, then we don't know what direction it's going to take sometimes.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Because
we all put ourselves into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where'd you guys record this at?
Shock City Studios, yeah. Right off Gravelly there.
Yeah. I had a... I've been teaching guitar for a long, long, long time, and one of my former students, who's now a friend of mine, is now one to plug in. His name's Joe McMahon.
Yeah.
He works out of Nashville. Kevin Gordon, if you've heard of him, he's Kevin's producer. He's done a lot of stuff, and so I asked him, I said, could you come up and engineer us? And he came up from Nashville, brought all his cool microphones, all guitars and stuff, and I think really helped bring the production together on the CD. Nice, he did a great job.
Yeah. I've been a fan of Kevin's for a while, and I met him at a home show or house show in Wildwood area or something like that. Somebody had him up and for a show, and it was kind of one of those things. Like, it was my first time actually going to a house show like that, and I saw it online, and I was like, oh, that sounds cool, I'll go check it out. And then, like, I was thinking it was a venue, and then I was like, oh, and it turns out it's just their home, and it was like $20 at the door kind of thing. So I got to see Kevin, like, in somebody's living room with, like, 30 people or something like that.
Nice.
And it was like,
and I think there's another artist, Sarah Potenza, who she just released a CD. Joe produced her as well.
Okay.
In fact, Lee Howland, Eastside Slim, told me we were over there. He goes, you know, he says, I look at all my favorite artists over the last few years, and I look at the CDs, and Joe McMahon's producing them.
Yeah.
So it's great. He's a former student of mine. I was really happy he was able to come in and help.
Yeah.
He's a great guy and got a great ear, and he's a great player, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, very nice. Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I mean, you know, I just did rhythm, you know, on the guitar or on the CD. And I just pretty much gave Joe free rein. He's like, well, what kind of sound do you want? I'm like, I don't know. Pick something, you know? So he would hook up different pedals and switch amps and stuff around and came up with some really cool stuff. And
yeah.
He had a microphone from...
Oliver Sane Studio.
That,
okay.
The Ike Turner mic, as he called it.
Yeah. Yeah.
the record, Time's Hard, record is available now, National Blues Museum,
yep.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
On the website, KingdomBrothers.com, is that right?
Kingdom Brothers Band. KingdomBrothersBand.com.
Okay.
It's on Amazon. Download it, or you can order a copy from there.
iTunes.
I mean, just,
yeah,
yeah.
The normal places.
So get out there and get yourself a copy. But mention in National Blues Museum, you guys will be there on Friday.
This Friday.
The 20th, and playing a gig over there on... I haven't been to a show yet there. Been once. I did a podcast with Jeremy Siegel Moss over there.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of fun talking about, I think we were promoting Big Muddy at the time and the National Blues Museum and things. So, so they got a little stage against the, like towards the front there or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is the second time actually for us.
Yeah. Yeah, we played...
Did we do an afternoon thing?
I think it was Saturday afternoon.
Saturday afternoon.
Not too long after they first opened.
Yeah.
We played there because they were doing, I think they were doing Saturdays originally.
Yeah.
Well, they might still be, but now they've started this Howlin' Fridays, they call it. So they're trying to get a lot of local artists in there on Friday. So this will be, our second time there. They got a great stage area. If you get there early, I think it's happy hour. There, you can bring the drinks from next door. They're right next to Sugar Fire. They've got their own bar in there, Sugar Fire Barbecue.
Yeah,
they opened the same time the Blues Museum did, so it's nice to have them close by.
Where I work, across the parking lot, to Sugar Fire.
Okay.
And it's sometimes it's like torture because you're downwind from all that stuff, and I'm like, man, it smells so good, and like, I know all about the Sugar Fire, man. It's some good stuff over there. So
yeah,
but the museum has just amazing exhibits. I mean, it's great.
Yeah.
A lot of hands-on stuff, a lot of interactive exhibits there. I forget what you call it, but like you can roll the pictures of Chuck Berry doing the duck walk.
Okay.
You know, and it's like one frame at a time, and as you flip them, you know, it you can see them moving. That's pretty cool. They got old player piano there. There's actually a whole St. Louis section of the museum. And then there's a listening station right there, and they have a bunch of the St. Louis artists that have had CDs or been on the Blues Society compilation CDs. You can listen at the listening station there. And
yeah.
A lot of local people.
Yeah, I think that's that was the coolest part for me, is seeing a bunch of my friends on the walls already there and stuff, you know. Like,
yeah.
And, you know, so that was... That's really neat that they, you know, included all, how much incredible St. Louis blues talent that we have here and stuff.
Right.
So.
And you see how it's connected throughout the years, too. I mean, you know, from back in the early 20s, you know, Lonnie Johnson and, of course, Henry Townsend from every decade from my up until, you know, when he passed. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I was, that was another one, you know, kind of, I wasn't well aware of, but I met Alonzo working at Oyster Bar,
yeah.
And then, you know, kind of heard stories about his dad, and I had no idea, like, you know, that Henry Townsend did everything he did. And so I had Alonzo come on the show and tell me some of his dad's stories, and, like, it was one of my favorite recordings because it was just, you know, he's such a great... Alonzo is a great guy himself.
He is.
But he had some amazing stories to tell about his dad and stuff, so...
Yeah.
So that was a lot of fun, and it's nice to see Alonzo's, like... You know, kind of doing his own thing with it. He's, you know, emceeing the Big Muddy and all that stuff. And, like, it was just, it's a lot of fun to watch him kind of carry the torch.
Yeah.
Lonnie John, so, yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so you guys, we got the records out playing Blues Museum. What's it like there, like, for you guys, like, you know, to kind of be in among all that? Like, I mean, is that kind of just... blow your mind sometimes?
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
Yeah. Very humbling.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, because like I said, the whole history, being a guitar player and the history of guitar in St. Louis, like I said, it goes back to the great Lonnie Johnson, Albert King, Chuck Berry, I know I'm going to leave a ton of Grant Green, the great jazz guitarist from St. All these people, and then we're and the people that are around today, and
yeah.
We're just so humbled to be a part of that.
Yeah.
I actually never met the man, but I grew up sharing a property line with Chuck Berry of Berry Acres and stuff in Wentzville, so it's you know, definitely being out there, we always had that kind of connection to Chuck Berry and stuff, but yeah, never actually met him. I've seen him twice perform, once at Duck Room and once at Lemonwoody.
Yeah.
Some kind of like a scholarship thing out there, so he'd put on a concert. And
well, you know, it's when you have people like that, you know, that are so instrumental in just how they influenced modern music. You know, I remember seeing an interview one time with Dickie Betts and Allman Brothers, and he was like, "Look, if you're a guitar player, you have to go through the Chuck Berry phase," because you have to go through that where you learn how to, you know, play that rhythm and play those songs, and he goes, and get it to where you're doing it comfortably, and you do it to where, you know, it sounds right. And he says everybody has to go through that, you know, and you can hear that, you know, just that influence he had on modern rock and roll, you know, with the stuff he was doing in, you know, back in his day.
Yeah, so. Definitely. Yeah, that's a lot of how I've been discovering music. It's kind of going backwards, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I find out, you know, I'm a huge Allman Brothers fan, and like you find out, like, oh, they're heavily influenced by all these players, and then like I go through and I discover that, and I'm like, man, this is amazing stuff. And it's like,
if you want to hear where Dwayne Allman's slide came from, listen to Little Walter's harmonica playing.
Yeah,
that's where.
Yeah,
that's what he patterned it after.
Right. Yeah, I mean, but that's what gets me. Like, seeing everybody everybody talks about, you know, Led Zeppelin and stuff, and like, I'm like, yeah, they're great, but like, have you heard the stuff that they were listening to that made all these songs? Like, I mean,
Instead of "I Can't Quit You, Baby" by Led Zeppelin, listen to "I Can't Quit You, Baby" by Otis Rush.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I've been trying to be you know, a sponge for it, man, just absorbing as much of it as I can, because I love it all.
Well, I mean, I grew up, my dad had a great record collection. I mean, B.B. King and Bobby Blue Bland and a lot of the old soul artists and everything, you know. But there were still people that I didn't know existed,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I didn't hear about them until, you know, say I started reading about Stevie Ray Vaughan, and he would talk about Buddy Guy, and he would talk about these other artists, and I'm like, oh, okay. Or Eric Clapton, you know, he would mention, you know, Big Bill...
Big Bill Brunzy.
Big Bill Brunzy, you know, yeah. And I'm like, okay, who's that guy? You know, yeah. So next thing I know, I'm going to the library, and I'm like checking out tapes of these guys, you know, finding out who they are and what they sounded like, and I'm like, wow, you know, talking about going backwards, right. I'm like, what's old is new, you know? These guys they respected that old form so much that they kept it going.
Mm-hmm. I saw an interview with Eric Clapton. He said, don't listen to me, listen to B.B. King.
Yeah.
I took him up on it. Yep. I still listen to it, but sure. Yeah. B.B.'s the man.
Yeah.
I was at Oyster Bar the other night, and Marquise Knox was up there playing.
Yeah.
With just an incredible set, him and his band. And B.B. King's daughter,
Shirley.
Shirley.
Yeah.
She came in and sang a couple songs with Marquise, and it was just a really great time. And you know, I know B.B. had quite a few children, but it was still pretty neat to have a, you know, bloodline in the building there. So,
well, when you look at it from a historical standpoint, I mean, any connection, you know, like a real life connection you can make from today to that, you know, to the person is it's inspiring no matter, you know, what. It's like to say, wow, this is really B.B. King's child, you know, and that's pretty cool.
Sure.
Yeah,
and she's an entertainer too. She was out there just feeding off the crowd and giving it all to him. It was great, and that was a lot of fun to watch, and especially her and Marquise going back and forth and some of the stuff they were doing on so.
When he's such a great performer, I'm sure he was feeding off of her too.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, I saw a picture of him at the end of the night, and he's like just sitting in a chair, and somebody's like trying to push his back into place. You know, he's like, and Alonzo actually put a caption on there. He says, "When you left it all on the stage, you know."
Exactly. Yeah. I was you guys have other big plans coming up for 2017? You guys,
we're just trying to work on our marketing, you know, and promote the CD, you know, get it out there. We're hoping to pick up some festivals this year that we weren't in last year. You know, hopefully we get to go back to the big money again. You know, that was our first time last year, so hopefully we'll be back there. And you know, there's so many great local venues, you know. When you talk about, you know, not being able to keep up with all the artists that are here, you know, one of the things is there's so many different areas in the St. Louis greater area that have their own little pockets of music. It's not like some of the towns where you just have one street, one row of clubs, and that's where the music district, you know. You know, we have several areas that you can go to, and there are artists play in all these areas at the same time, and it's just, you know, it's amazing the talent that's here. But trying to keep plugging away and playing as much as we can.
Yeah, we were kind of talking before we sat down about that Bon Jovi contest going on, and everybody's kind of throwing their name in the hat for that. Contest was, I guess they were having somebody local open
at each
up all
stop.
The show.
At each stop.
Yeah, so
that's a great idea.
Yeah,
I like that. That's a great idea.
You know, I think it's nice to see that they're kind of giving back, because, you know, they were given an opportunity once. You know,
all these
bands were local bands at one time.
And
so, nice to put somebody out on a big stage in the spotlight like that and give them a chance to shine. And we were talking, I think, Jeremiah threw his name in there and stuff.
Yeah,
and,
Jeremiah Johnson.
I was Jeremiah's guitar teacher.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Wasn't the very first one, but I pretty early on, so.
Yeah.
When he was in his teens.
Right on. Yeah. He's
So I'm very proud of him.
For sure, he's a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah.
We like to say Ron's the teacher to the stars. A lot of his former students are doing very well in the music industry.
That's fantastic, man. Yeah. That's, That's gotta feel great to you know, see these guys and and go on and chase the dreams and stuff. So I feel like that a little, you know, not, I don't know, I've never taught, but I've had Connor Lau on the show twice, and he's 14-year-old, or not what he was at the time when he was on the show. He's 16 now, 17 maybe. but just an incredible guitar player for as a young man, and he got to, I think he played like right before, right after you guys, or maybe it was the next day even. Yeah. But it was on that same stage, but him and was School of Rock band, and at Big Muddy, and which I thought was really cool that they allowed the the younger generation to come and play too.
Absolutely.
So.
It's sort of funny, I didn't teach him, but Tyler Stokes came up to me and goes, I know who you are. I said, how do you know that? I was teaching at a school where his mom and I worked together, and we did this Beatles concert, and I was playing electric guitar. Tyler said, and I saw you and said, I'm going to play guitar like that. So indirectly, I guess, I started influencing. I can't take any credit for teaching him anything, right, for sure. But he's a great player, too. Yeah. He's a great singer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a young artist coming up.
Yeah. Just signed to Devin Allman's label.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's a lot of I think you learned quite a bit from Devin.
They grew up, what, next
neighbors
door?
Or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So helped.
Just like I said, so I can't take any credit for that.
Well, yeah, we so keep an eye out for the Kingdom Brothers coming to neighborhood near you, hopefully. Get a bunch of shows coming up here soon. And you guys can follow along on the website, KingdomBrothersBand.com.
Yes.
And Facebook and
all Facebook, that. Definitely.
Yep. So,
all of our shows. I'm sure we'll have. We don't have too much booked yet in February, but I'm sure we'll get back into the Beale on Broadway. That's one of our favorite places to play. We're usually there a couple times a month. We probably have another show at Nesby's Barbecue out in Sunset Hills.
We'd like to come up in March. We'd like to come to the Oyster Bar.
Yeah,
we've stuck our head in there a couple times.
Working on that with Alonzo, trying to get in there.
Hi, Alonzo. Yeah.
We're available.
All right. Yeah, they do have kind of a niche thing. Like they do they do a lot of blues, a reggae jam. They do a lot of different stuff. It's nice to see more traditional blues, like St. Marquis playing there now. And things like this. I think that'd be a lot of fun to get you guys over there too. So
we'll work all corners of the triangle.
Yeah, right.
Well, we can drop some tracks in, get everybody a little taste of the record, and do you guys have any requests you'd like to play?
I'd say whatever you want to put on there. Yeah.
Put your favorites.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll throw some tunes on, and then grab a copy. Like I said, you can pick it up at shows. You can pick it up at National Blues Museum on Friday the 20th. You can pick it up on iTunes and Amazon and all your other places. So, so check it out.
And they have them at the gift shop in the Blues Museum.
Yeah, yep. Right on. Very cool. Well, all right. Well, thank you so much, guys. I appreciate you taking a little time out to hang, and I'll see you guys soon.
Great. Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
My life anymore. Not gonna.
tonight. Through the eyes of faith, I see everything gonna be alright now. Worry, worry, worry.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Well, yeah, that was it.